Now, if you're a home cook and have been looking to expand your kitchen skills, we have the Food Friday for you. This week, we talked to a chef to learn about how to incorporate restaurant techniques in a home kitchen and how to find inspiration and some new flavors. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a fancy technique or one that seems fancy anyway that you've learned to use in your home kitchen? How does it work? What does it do for your food? Are you in need of some help? Do you have some questions for a guest in order to help you take more culinary risks? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dan Kluger is a chef and the owner of Loring Place in New York City. He's the author of the cookbook Chasing Flavor, Techniques and Recipes to Cook Fearlessly. Dan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, you write in Chasing Flavor that you're inspired in part to write this because you get asked a lot, how do I make this at home? And you wanted to find ways that actual, you know, real life kitchen cooks can at least capture some of that restaurant essence. How hard is it to translate what you do in a restaurant kitchen into our home kitchens?
I think that, you know, the idea with the book is to try and break down a little bit of that mystique that it's really that different. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of skill that goes into what we do, but a lot of what we do is build a great pantry and a great pantry of staples that can be used to elevate simple dishes and learning some simple techniques to elevate flavor. I'm not going to say that's exactly the same as eating in the restaurant. If I say that, nobody's going to come to the restaurant anymore. But there is the way to kind of break down that barrier a little bit, make people feel more confident. And that was the goal in the book.
And what I like about the book is, I mean, you've got recipes, but the message isn't follow these recipes to the letter or else. It's each recipe gives a technique that you or an ingredient or a pre-made ingredient that you can take from that recipe and then use in your other cooking. Why was it important to you to communicate not just the recipes, but the techniques that we can learn from them?
Because you can build flavor through something as simple as roasting a vegetable properly. And that could be roasting it where it gets some char on it, or roasting it on a rack where it actually starts to dry up a little bit and become more intense in flavor. So something as simple as techniques like that can make a difference in, again, really simple dishes. I mean, my kids never really liked steamed vegetables, but they love roasted vegetables. And so I think as soon as you start to change a little bit of the flavor of something and make it a little more addictive, it's wonderful.
You just happened to key in on one piece of advice from your book that, Dan, I'm going to use probably this weekend. I oven roast vegetables a lot, and I do them right on a pan or in a casserole dish, and they come out fine. But, you know, you got to flip them, and sometimes the ones in this corner get a little burned too early or whatever. You say use, I'm going to do this, I'm going to buy one, a wire rack, a wire baking rack, crisscross, not just the slats going in one way, and oven bake them on that. What is that? It sounds great. What does that do for us?
Right. So by lifting it up out of the pan, you're allowing air to circulate all around it. Whether or not you have a convection oven, you're still allowing air to circulate all the way around the vegetables or whatever you're cooking. So the wire rack can make a huge difference in how you roast things. You still have to watch out for the ones in the corners, et cetera. But if you took something like a butternut squash, and we do a recipe in the book that has this, but if you took just the butternut squash and you cut it into a 1-inch cube, toss a little olive oil, salt, and pepper, and you cook one on a rack, and you cook the other batch straight on the tray, you'll notice night and day difference, right? The one on the rack, it becomes what I refer to as sort of raisinated. It's starting to dry up like a raisin. It gets a little more caramelized, gets a little crispy, and it's really intense in butternut flavor. The one that's right on the pan, it's a little more soggy. The top is caramelized, but the bottom is soggy. And so, again, it's little techniques like this that can make a huge difference.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time doing the show today because I want to get out there and buy a rack just like this and start using it right away. I love this. Talking to Dan Kluger, chef in New York City. His new cookbook is Chasing Flavor, Techniques and Recipes to Cook Fearlessly. Now, Dan, you shared a few recipes with us. We've got them up at WPR.org/Food Friday. You just mentioned squash. Here's a recipe. I like this. Roasted acorn squash, okay, with spicy granola and apple gastrique. Tell us about this recipe.
Yeah, so this is a great example of the section in the book that we call takeaways, and every recipe has a takeaway, and that's something that I want you to learn from it. And it could be a technique, or it could be the sauce, or in this case, it could be something like the granola. And so we sort of simply roast acorn squash, you know, pretty, I don't want to say mundane vegetable, but not the most exciting vegetable. It is a little bit sweet. So we then balance that out with the sweet and sour gastrique, which is literally sweet and sour. That's what gastrique means. And it's got some apple cider and cider vinegar, and that's drizzled on. And then we make this sweet and spicy granola. So it has a ton of texture. So you have soft squash and this granola that it's more of a savory granola. It has ginger, it has chilies, it has smoked paprika. And again, that's something that we want people to use to build their pantry. You can use this granola on that. You could use it on butternut squash. You could use it on potatoes. You could sprinkle it on a salad. Some people I know have even been using it for their breakfast with yogurt. So again, it's about learning some simple techniques and simple recipes that help you build a pantry and become more confident to mix and match and create exciting food.
I love that idea. You call it component cooking in the book, where that granola is one example, or you know, you might pickle some onions or carrots for one dish and then use them tomorrow in a salad or something. You might make a vinaigrette for a sauce and then use it as a salad dressing the next day. That idea that the effort we put in for a part of this meal, then we can hold it extra over and use it in something completely different. I love that. Talk about how that gives us some flexibility.
Sure. So, I mean, again, you know, you're not going to necessarily get this by opening the book and picking out your two favorite recipes. You need to read through it, you know, cook out of it, get used to it, and start to see that the dressing from the chicory salad on page whatever it is, 130, can also really work well with some roasted chicken and some arugula. And the reason being is, you know, in the food, we want lots of sweet and sour and spicy. We want a little bitter. We want crunchy. We want all these elements that we refer to as peaks and valleys. And in order to get these peaks and valleys, it's, again, about building this pantry and feeling comfortable that if you're going for, again, trying to create this balance, these sweet and sour components, well, you have a great vinaigrette. So why not use that again? You don't have to necessarily make the vinaigrette for the chicken salad on page 200. The one you made on 190, that worked really well. So that's what I think, you know, the goal is. And I think it sounds maybe easier said than done, but as people start to cook through it, they'll see it. And you know, to your original point about why I wrote the book, I have people come to me all the time and say, you know, this broccoli is amazing, or these butternut squash fries are incredible. How do you make this sauce? And I tell them, and first of all, they're blown away how simple it is. But then they say, well, I want to use this on everything. And that's the point is, you know, a lot of these things, not everything, but a lot of these things can be used in multiple ways. And something like the lemon parmesan aioli from the butternut squash fries also works really well with pasta. It works well with pizza. I cook fairly simply at home because my kids don't love a ton of sauces, but I always have one of these things, a condiment or a sauce or something like that, that I can then spoon on simply roasted chicken or some plain fish.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Phil is with us in Verona. Phil, hello.
Hey, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
What are you up to, Phil?
Well, actually, I had a question. Traditionally, I sous vide chicken breasts every week for, you know, salads and things like that. I was hoping to integrate maybe my immersion circulator for the turkey this year for Thanksgiving. And I guess I'm just curious how I can get the most flavor into it, either by doing something before or after it's been through its cook time.
Phil, thanks a lot for the call. I think you mentioned in the book using sous vide for poached eggs, Dad, but do you have any thoughts for Phil doing that technique for turkey? And remind us what sous vide is, because I always it's not something I do myself.
Sure. So sous vide cooking is essentially cooking in a bag with no oxygen at a specific temperature water. So you submerge the bag of food or whatever it's going to be into the water at a specific temperature. You're typically cooking low and slow. So that chicken breast that you cook comes out incredibly tender and juicy. It doesn't lose a lot of its moisture. The using that for turkey is probably one of the best things you could do this Thanksgiving. It is incredibly beneficial to cooking turkey. I think when I do it, and I typically do it, I'll just throw a little bit of butter and some herbs and garlic in the bag, seal it up, and I'll cook the turkey, take it out, pat it dry, put it skin side down in a nonstick pan over medium heat and kind of crisp up that skin, and then I'll just baste it with some butter and some herbs again. You can go that route. You could make a paste of herbs and garlic and stick it into the bag under the skin and cook it. But either way, that, you know, the goal is that you're cooking it slow and low. And in my mind, the goal is that you're then going to use the skin either separately or on top and crisp it up to bring in that texture.
Phil, hope that helps. Thanks for calling in. We're talking to Chef Dan Kluger right now for this week's edition of Food Friday. His new cookbook is Chasing Flavor, Techniques and Recipes to Cook Fearlessly. We've got a few of those recipes with the techniques attached to them up at WPR.org/Food Friday. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest about how to learn something from restaurant-style cooking in your own kitchen? And have you found techniques that you've been able to apply not just to that one recipe, but you can learn from this and apply it to that? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our Food Friday conversation with Chef Dan Kluger, owner of New York City's Loring Place. His new cookbook is called Chasing Flavor, Techniques and Recipes to Cook Fearlessly. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you need some advice on tackling a particular technique in the kitchen? What kind of flavors are you interested in trying out? Or if you have something yourself that's really helped you cook that you want to share, join in, 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Rebecca is with us in Madison. Rebecca, hello.
Hi.
What'd you want to ask about, Rebecca?
You were talking a little bit ago about roasting vegetables and the difference between them being directly on the pan, where they're a little more soggy, and elevated with a rack, where they're a little bit more crispy, and I think you said like raisin-like or something like that. So I'm wondering, can you use those wire cooling racks? They're just plain metal wire cooling racks that you use for like putting cookies or cakes on after they come out of the oven. Can you just put one of those in a pan, or do you need a special rack thing?
Rebecca, does it have wires just going in one direction, the one you have, or both directions, kind of squares?
Both.
Okay, so that's good news, Dan. But are all of those necessarily oven safe?
They should be. I mean, if it's aluminum or stainless, it should be. I don't know of any cooling racks really that wouldn't be made for that. And as long as it's got the wires going both directions like you asked, it should be just fine.
Fantastic. Rebecca, thanks for calling, and thanks for making it clear that I'm not the only one excited about this idea. Back to your calls now. Shannon is with us in Milwaukee. Shannon, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Shannon?
So I've been looking into kind of incorporating more whole spices into my cooking, like Sichuan peppercorns and things like that. But there's a lot of information about using like an electric spice grinder or a mortar and pestle. And I was just wondering if there was a suggestion about what's the best tool to use. And if it's a mortar and pestle, what type I should be using. I'm looking for something that's pretty broad range that can just be used for everyday cooking.
All right. Great question. I have an old coffee grinder I use for spices, Dan, but what do you recommend for when we want to take those, you know, cumin seeds and things like that and get a lot of flavor out of them?
Yeah, it kind of depends on what you're making and what the end result is supposed to be. Most of the time, I want finely ground. Once in a while, I want something like coriander seed that might just be kind of crushed and add some texture. You can use a mortar and pestle if you're going to. I would look for sort of like a simple ceramic one, stone one, something that's not too coarse so so that you're not ending up with lots of crevices that get filled with the food and then you're trying to get it out. I think they're great for making, again, kind of coarse marinades where you don't want it to be too smooth. But in general, with the spices, I use a coffee grinder just like you, simple, you know, Braun coffee grinder. It can hold up to about a cup of spices. And if I'm going for coarse, I just pulse it a few times, you know, tap the top. But I worked in an Indian-inspired restaurant with the late, great Floyd Cardoz for about 7 years, and we used electric grinders, whether it was coarse or whole, and I'm a huge fan of those.
Thanks for that call, Shannon. I should say I was inspired to start grinding my own spices by having Floyd Cardoz on a Food Friday episode a bunch of years back, and it's huge. It makes a big difference. And, Dan, that issue reminds me of something else I read in your book, something I'm guilty of. With herbs in things, and I chop my herbs, and you say no, go easy on that. Why?
One time through, you always hear me screaming at the cooks in the kitchen. One time through, my belief, with the exception of essentially parsley, which can kind of, you know, you can kind of take a little more, but in general, you want to go one time through your herbs, no matter how fine you're going for them, because the more you chop it, the more you're releasing those natural oils into your cutting board. And, you know, cooks will always challenge me on that, and I will show them that their cutting board is now bright green and the oil is getting smeared into it. And so if you want to go for a really finely chopped something, it takes knife skills, it takes getting used to it, but you can bunch up real small and go really fine. If you wanted to do it one more time through, fine, but the people that are going back and forth rocking their knife over it, you're bruising those herbs, you're releasing those oils into the cutting board rather than the food.
Guilty as charged. We're talking to Dan Kluger. His new book is Chasing Flavor, Techniques and Recipes to Cook Fearlessly. Hey, let's check out another recipe you shared with us. We've got it at WPR.org/Food Friday. Oh, you mentioned pizza earlier. Let's do that one. Brussels sprout pizza with pickled chilies, and we're in Wisconsin. We love this part. Cheddar. Tell us about this pizza.
So we make a whole wheat pizza dough, which has a ton of flavor to it. Our pizzas are less the, you know, classic margarita. They are more like this. They have not necessarily a ton going on, but they're less classic and a little more involved. So this one has a little bit of ricotta. We make our own ricotta. I think there's even a recipe in the book for how to make ricotta. It's a simple task, a lot of fun. And then we take the outer leaves of Brussels sprouts. We blanch them really quick so they have a little bit of moisture in them and they're more or less cooked. This will allow them to finish cooking in the oven and not dry out and get totally crisp like we were talking about earlier. Something like this pizza, you don't want just a bunch of crisp leaves. And so we squeeze those out, lay them on top. We make a little garlic oil, sprinkle that on. And then we finish it with some cheddar and pickled jalapenos and a little bit of lemon zest. And that goes back to what I was talking about in terms of balance, right? You have something that's kind of rich now with the cheese, and it's finished with a little bit of acid from the pickles and the lemon, and it's also finished with a little bit of spice. And that just balances the food out. And again, you may say, I don't like heat. That's fine. What I want you to get from it is that you need a little bit of acid to balance this out. So if you don't want to do pickled chilies, hit it with a little splash of vinegar or squeeze a lemon. Adding that acid in is one of these techniques that builds flavor and makes the food that much more interesting.
Now this one, you got to be a little premeditated here. You got to make the dough and let it sit for 12 hours. This is one of those things you talk about learning from restaurants. You can do a lot of your work in advance with components, like in this case, the pizza dough. Should we change our mindset to, like, you know, have that stuff done when we have time in advance so that we're not doing everything at once when we're trying to cook dinner?
Yeah, so I mean, I would say two things. One, in terms of the pizza, this goes back to things that we talk about in the book in terms of, look, we're telling you how to make pizza dough and we want you to make pizza dough. If you don't want to make the pizza dough, no problem. Use store-bought dough. Use a shell. Do whatever you need to do, but at least incorporate this balance of flavor that we're trying to teach people. To the other point about getting ahead, a lot of the restaurants talk about that. You know, the restaurant, again, you talk about the mystique of a restaurant. Most restaurants, they're not cooking everything for you right at that minute. The vegetables were blanched. The sauce was made. Things were already chopped. We're finishing it, what we call a la minute. And so we're teaching you through these recipes, and we point out places where you can do something in advance. You can get something a day or two done, get something done a day or two in advance, set it aside, wrap it up, and now you're ready to cook. And all you have to do is pull that acorn squash out, warm it up, drizzle it with the glaze, throw the granola on, and boom, you have this amazing dish. And you only had to be in the kitchen with your guests in the house for 10 minutes. But you spent, you know, an hour the day before. So there's a lot that can be done, and that's something that we try and teach through this book as well.
Great place to leave it. Dan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
That's Dan Kluger, chef and owner of Loring Place in New York City. He joined us for this week's edition of Food Friday to talk about his new cookbook. It's called Chasing Flavor, Techniques and Recipes to Cook Fearlessly. You can check out a few recipes we talked about today and one we didn't actually at WPR.org/Food Friday. Head over there and find that Brussels sprouts pizza with pickled chilies and cheddar. Crust recipe, you can use it or use a store-bought crust if you want. Roasted acorn squash with spicy granola and apple gastrique. And roast chicken on a bed of vegetables. Again, all at WPR.org/Food Friday.